Actually, if we're not having the drinks, can we get the mugs out? Because that's a recruitment agency.
I thought there. I said that, yeah.
Yeah,
so yeah, I'll drop
on the deck, guys, yeah. I'll sort them out afterwards. Good time, that's...
Yeah, timing.
There's always one, his phone.
Every meeting you go
so
in.
Important.
I've got to check mine now.
No,
turn the volume down.
Mine's on airplane mode, that's how considerate I am.
Ah, oh, bless.
I'm going to do the same.
Sorry, aeroplane, that was very American.
I'm on silent.
Right, are we all good?
Me?
Yeah.
Are you 100%? Do you want me to remove the battery?
So I'll do a little countdown, hit the table three times. It's just a sync point for all my cameras.
Yeah. Then intro on that one?
Yeah, so you're.
Yeah.
So that's a two shot of you two. That's
yeah.
a two shot of you two. That's the one.
So we've predominantly talking to that
camera. You're into that one.
Okay.
If you want to do address the cameras.
Well, we'll only address the camera.
Yeah,
obviously, when I did the intro.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And like,
yeah.
Fab. The rest, I want to be looking at these.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go. 3, 2, 1.
Hi everybody, and welcome to a bit of a different podcast today. We're doing a joint podcast with MetPro, which is the MetPro Insights. Got that one right, didn't
yes,
I, guys?
You did. Spot
yeah.
on.
And also the What's Current from NAPIT. So we're doing a bit of a different one. It's going to be fun. We've had a factory tour, which has been absolutely ace. Looked at loads of different products, but we're going to bring it all into a nice podcast for you. So let's start with some introductions. So we'll hand over to you guys. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm Jake Rudge. I'm the marketing manager here at MetPro Group. Have been for 8 years now. We're coming up on 8 years, so still a bit of a relative newbie in the industry. But yeah, it's been a bit of a wild ride, and it's been fantastic, especially getting to know you guys. And we're really grateful that you're taking the time to come and see, as we say, little old MetPro. So thank you.
Over to you, Mick.
Okay, I'm Mike Holmes. I'm the product and vendor development manager. I've been here forever, I think, but so that's my current role, and that involves me in all the new design, new development, and I work with the technical guys and QC guys to some of the products that we're going to talk about today.
Brilliant.
Over to you guys.
Who are we?
Oh, well, I'm Andy. I'm one of the new members of MetPro. I recently joined about.
You work for MetPro?
Have we not told you that yet?
New members of the team to MetPro, sorry. Yeah, joined about 4 weeks ago.
You work for NAPIT.
Oh yeah. You start again?
I think so. Right, what's been going on while I've not been in the room?
there's your blooper right there, mate.
There's my blooper, first one.
That's spot on.
Just do the bit where you say hand over to
yeah,
you. We
no
can edit that, can't we?
We all good to carry on?
Yeah, I'm just gonna let
it. He's cracking up.
Do you want your face to go a little bit less red?
Right, you work for NAPIT.
Tell you what I'll do.
Back in the room.
Over to you guys, Steve. Tell us about yourself.
Hi, I'm Steve Humphreys. I'm the technical commercial manager here at NAPIT. I've been in this role for about a year. My kind of role involves everything like this, doing fun stuff, podcasts, webinars, ELEX shows, and just getting the information out to our members, technical information in our publications and stuff like that. So a really good, interesting role, sitting on some committees to form things like the wiring regulations and stuff like that. So varied, but a great role, really enjoying it here.
Brilliant. It was nice to see you having a nice time out there, like kid in a sweet shop.
Oh, at the tour, mate, I'm just like that. I'm just like, this is just like geeky stuff. That's my wheelhouse right there. So yeah, absolutely love stuff like that. It brings me back to my time on the tools.
Lovely, bit of nostalgia.
Yeah, bit of
Lovely.
Nostalgia.
Andy?
Andrew Duffin here. Recently joined NAPIT as a commercial technical engineer. Really enjoyed my day here in your factory. Love getting to know your products, the quality that's in there and the checks you do. Really good so far. I'm really enjoying it.
Excellent.
He's the new boy, see. We're getting him trained up.
Yeah, welcome everyone. To
veteran visitor to MetPro, though. We have welcomed you here before in a former life.
Yes, definitely, yes. Yeah, it was good that was, yeah.
Yeah.
And thanks for inviting us back today.
No,
really
no
appreciate
at all. It's a pleasure.
So to kick us off then, like, you know, we're just going to have probably an hour's worth of a chat here, aren't we? And just like get into what you do and what's happening in industry. But tell us a little bit about the background, whoever wants to go on that one, of MetPro and sort of the things you do. So sort of an overview so the listeners and viewers can understand that.
I'll take that one if you want, Mick. Although, Mick, you've been here since 95, haven't you? When the company was established. We originally began with malleable conduit boxes. That was it. That's our bread and butter. I mean, the name itself, MetPro, metal products. That's what that means. That's where it came from.
I don't have to ask that question now because that.
No,
was
really, exactly.
Scrub that one out.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm here for you. We're coming up on our 30th year trading, and since then the company has gone just through consistent and at times rather explosive growth. So now it's not just malleable conduit boxes, whilst that is still a core product range for us. We've now got 10 or 11 product ranges that encompasses steel conduit tube is in there as well, steel channel, bracketry, PVC conduit accessories, flexible tube. We're a real commodity wheelhouse. But then beyond that, we've also got our Demon Kato Innovations range, which consists of Conlock, Rapid Saddle, Roller Tray, Trunk Clip and Tray Clip, and Easy Fit Channel Nuts as well, which I'm sure we'll get into later on. But an aspect of our business that not everybody knows is under the Demon Kato banner, we also manufacture bespoke components for OEM businesses as well. So Mick's much more versed in this, but you're working in multiple industries, aerospace, automotive, oil and petrochem, water, the list goes on. And in those industries, the tolerances we have to work to are so much more so much tighter than they would be on the commodity stuff. So Mick, if you want to give a bit more on that.
Well, yeah, I think really, again, metal products would be the main focus on that. But it could be anything from a very small, tiny screw right through to an iron casting used for some sort of machinery, like a drum effect or something. So what that's driven for us really is a level of QC and inspection and everything else that comes with that bespoke product, and allowed us to put in that procedure, which runs right across OEM stuff, right through all of our M&E stuff as well. So everything is inspected to that same high level.
I found that, before we move on to the next question, I found that quite interesting on the tour, because when we got to that QC place, you know, the quality control, for those that don't know, and we all have these acronyms, but quality control, the bespoke stuff, it's such a good feature to have, isn't it? Because you could get, like you say, a business or a company that wants something so weird and wonderful, you guys are able to say, yeah, we do metal products, we can do that and make it work, you know. And I love that part of it, and the scrutiny it goes through to get it right. It's it must be a real string to your bow to have that to offer customers. So it's not just an off the shelf kind of product. It doesn't feel like.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, obviously we've got some real strong suppliers, some of which who supply us for both sides of the business, really. And they develop it. And, you know, if you're talking specifically about certain products, be it a pressing or some sort of casting product, which they may be doing as an M&E product. Equally, we've given them business on bespoke stuff, bespoke castings, and that's worked well for us as well. So it's meant that we've got a stronger relationship with our suppliers, and quite a diverse relationship as well.
I think that shows.
Old school engineering. That's what I see. Yeah. You don't know, that's sort of a dying art of British sort of manufacturing and production, isn't it? Really, that have we lost that edge? But I don't think we have. It might have gone a bit more, you know, getting things in from abroad or whatever that much like, but we're still good at doing that stuff, aren't we, I think, as a country?
I believe so, and I think, look, you know, the globe is a much smaller place these days now with everything that's going on in regards to transport technology and everything else with that. So I think really what we need to do is use the supplier network to the greatest strengths, and that's what we're doing here at Metpro.
Yeah.
It's probably worth mentioning as well, that's that side of the bit. Well, in fact, the entire business, but it's incredibly critical on that side, is that we've got a team of three, in addition to Mike, and the quality team in house here. We have got it supported by three dedicated engineers, both domestically and internationally. And you know, it's not agency; it's dedicated Metpro employees. They only work for us, and they are on top of absolutely everything, which just mitigates any quality control issues that we might have when it leaves our doors, which it never does unless it is fit for purpose, by the way.
We don't have that on the factory tour with your manager Paul.
Yes.
You've only got so many workers, and it was just such a tight-knit run group, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, really knew, everyone knew what the role was in the factory. And I think that really helps with your quality, making sure your products go out the right amount to the right place. It was evident, wasn't it?
It really was fascinating to watch. Yeah, fascinating. You've really got it nailed down, you know, what you do, and it's good to see.
Well, everything's all geared to, I mean, one of our values at Metpro is customer first. In fact, that's the key value. There's others that sit behind that, and it's a team effort. And, you know, people see, starts if you talk about commodity products, you see it on the shelf in your local wholesaler, and you go and pick it up. We haven't got a clue what's gone on behind the scenes to get that to where it is, to the right standard. And it's a testament to the team and the colleagues that we have here at Metpro that it works so well, because, you know, with quality and also the onward transit of our products, we never ever want any problems, and we don't want anybody to be part of our processes.
And we do a lot of front end stuff to make sure that happens. You know, Jake's already talked about three colleagues we have. You know, we're working with our manufacturers wherever they are, ensuring that product as it's produced, even while it's being produced, sometimes the finished article before it leaves where it's being produced from, right through to additional checks we do here. And it's a strong word, accountability, but I think for us, it just helps us just to make sure that everybody knows their role. What's required of them within that, and that process flow enables product to be spotted if there's any problems at the soonest opportunity.
I think accountability is probably the right word, because when we think of words like accountability, it sounds like we're trying to catch someone out. But it's not about that. If your ethos is the quality and the customer comes first, accountability is a natural part of that, and that's been missing for a while. Because it's a lot of that'll do kind of attitude. We can't have that in an industry that's promoting safety. And us as Napier, that's what we are about. You know, if there's safer products out there, please use them. Don't go for the cheaper option.
That was going to be a question I was going to ask. I mean, you've sort of answered it there anyway, but do you think we have enough accountability? Do you think we hold ourselves to the standard that we should in the industry?
I think what we see, I mean, obviously, as a competent person scheme, you know, which is the core of our business amongst other things, you know, our members are assessed, you know, we're not in their faces every 5 minutes because, you know, they have a yearly assessment. They might get improvement actions, and that will be things like the quality of the install. You know, the wiring regs BSM 6M1 is quite clear. You know, it talks about the equipment you're using to be British standards. So, you know, our field team will point out things they're using, which, you know, they're up against a battle on cost a lot of the time, and you know what we try and encourage as an organisation is we don't want to be in a race to the bottom. And speaking to you guys as we was on the tour, you're in the same thing. You know, you might not be the cheapest, but don't get involved in that race to the bottom where you're going to do it 50 quid cheaper just to get the job. You know, spend that time in the quality gear and put it in properly. So we do see it, unfortunately, because the electrical industry as it is, you know, it's not as strong as some of the technical areas. You know, obviously we've got things like Part P in place meant to mitigate against that, but it's not the answer. It's about that accountability comes from the installer themselves, and that's from within. If you're an installer and you're, you know, I wasn't the quickest, but I made sure I did the job properly. I didn't want to do it twice or someone to tell me, rip that out and do it again. So I think that's a personal thing, and there'll be plenty of installers out there that will just do that, isn't it?
Yeah, what I wanted to add that, I think the part of this podcast today was to try, I don't like the word educate, but was like to try and inform members about products that have that quality, you know, so they understand that there is a difference in price, but there's a difference in price for a reason, not just because of a name, for argument's sake. There's a reason behind it, and try and make members more aware of that, really, so they do pick a product for a reason, you know, not just because it's cheap, you know, like Steve was alluding to. Sometimes you might have to do it twice then because the product didn't have that quality, and unfortunately budgets do dictate that for you know, members.
I was from an era of like my background really after my apprenticeship was bigger mechanical electrical companies. So you know, your big ones out there, Crown House, Drake and Skull, you know, they're all gone by the wayside, a lot of them now. But they used to have things like Clark of the Works. The specs were really high specs. And I saw that sort of dissolve over the years, which was a little bit worrying, the decline in the industry, where it was like time and cost became the considerations for a job, not how good the job was put in. So once that kind of thing, where you were told to rip it out again because it wasn't good enough, was a good thing. Yes, it was annoying. It taught you to do things the right way. I'm not sure, but I think slowly, to answer to your question, Jay, I think it is coming back because people on social media and things like these podcasts are making people a bit more savvy to say, well, actually, no, I'm going to hold firm on what I do because I know it's got that kite mark, and my customer will probably respect me more.
Well, absolutely. We're seeing a movement now, and it's all like the driving factors. Historically, driving factor was cost, and so people were trying to get cost out of products, and let's be honest, that's resulted over the years in some products out there that really aren't fit for purpose. And so for us, we've always set our stall out to ensure that our products meet the standards and that the right quality that's expected to do the job on a site. But the other driving factor that's coming through now, obviously, is that at the other end, and we used the word accountability before, the Building Safety Act now has just come in. There's a driving factor there now that takes everything from architect right through to end user, making sure that what's been originally spec'd is correct for the job, and those installing it are using the same product, and if they don't, well, they become accountable for what they've put in. And so now there's a huge interest in regards to product and the accreditations behind it. We're seeing that a lot now, and it comes down to us. Obviously, you guys are much closer to the end user than we are, and it's great to have your involvement and feedback, because we rely on that to help us make some of the decisions we have here, but and educate us about the products. But equally, we hear coming down the chain of supply questions about accreditations more and more now. It's almost a daily thing for me answering these kind of questions on standards and whatever, because that's what's being asked for from site. So
is that supplying more like data sheets on your products, how they've been tested and etc.? Is that what they're after?
It's very much about the products, what standard are they to, and declarations around that. But there's not a lot of strong knowledge about it. People, what tends to happen is a question will come from site, and that same question then just gets pushed down through a series of emails through to us here, and we've got to decipher it into English and then send back what we think the answer is going to be. Yeah. And most of the time we get the information right as to what was originally requested. But you're right. It's about the product, what it's accredited to now, because people need to rubber stamp it on sites now. They want to know what's coming on our site, what you're fitting, and does it meet the spec, especially on the bigger sites, obviously the public sites and everything else. That's a definite now. Yeah. And I think that's a definite driving factor for the standards of products to be raised, and that's a good thing.
But also a challenge for you guys, I would have thought, as well, because like you say, you mentioned where you are in the chain. If you're supplying the wholesaler and then the designer, and then you might have the installer, so you've got upward when the thing goes on the wall, whatever it may be, a piece of conduit, you've somehow got to find a way to go, hi, we're here amongst all the race to the bottom people and the cheaper imports. That must be a bit of a challenge as well, I would have thought.
Well, I think that's very much more on a marketing thing, and just talking about our products and what they're actually capable of, and that brand awareness and stuff. But based on that, I'm going to hand over to this man, because he knows far more about that than I do.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is a challenge, and it's. I mean, I said at the start that I'm coming up on 8 years in the industry now. Probably will be over 8 once this goes out, and I've been saying the same thing in many respects for 8 years. Especially when you're talking around products like conduit tube and channel and threaded rod. Not all products are made the same, and so you have to keep banging the drum. Like you talk about our tube, you might be able to get it cheaper from a competitor, but what's their wall thickness? And can you guarantee that's not gonna split or ripple when you're bending it? So we use social media is as you guys are very well aware. That's a key tool for us. But you know, beyond that, we put a lot of time into our staff, into our colleagues. They're the ones that are talking to the customers directly. And if they can say exactly what I've just said then to a customer, then it's kind of, is the stamping correct on every single length of tube as is required by the standard? What about channel? So we differentiate ourselves, I believe, quite well in that way. And we're very, very vocal. But another thing that we do with our tube systems and our steel channel system and steel channel and bracketry system is we offer a 5-year warranty as well, because we're so confident. Everything is marked where applicable. Obviously it's a bit difficult with certain products like saddles, but everything is marked, and it's a clear cut thing. That's how confident we are.
We learnt about the marking today, didn't we, because we've all installed tube, haven't we, as electricians, and saw this marker on there and like, what's this about? And I found that fascinating today about what I've seen.
Mike's explanation was
spot on.
He's done that a few times.
You've got to give it again now.
But I think it comes down to brand as well. And obviously we've got the MetPro brand. Jake mentioned the Demon Kato innovation brand as well. And we're really keen to try and get those brand names out, because we need them spec'd on jobs. And that way then, we're confident in that quality. We want our customers to be confident in the quality to the point where they're going, you know what, I want MetPro on there. And I'm going to spec it from the start. Then it follows the way through. Because the reality is, once that's spec'd on the job, if anybody diverts from that, then they take responsibility for what they're buying within that whole golden thread chain. So for us, that's something we would love to get to. And that's why we have conversations like this, because we want to offer out the knowledge we have and help people make their own choices in regards to product, and go for the best products that suit the jobs.
Yeah. You are right as well. That there is a definite shift I'm seeing to going back to brands. You know, we've had a period of real Wild West in the UK, which seems to be a bit anomalous compared to many other parts of the world, certainly mainland Europe. But people do seem to... this is a bit of a... This is a big moment, I think, for me personally, because it's evidence that the industry is going that way. Not that you haven't been advocating for quality before, of course you would be, but using the mediums like this and having an open and honest conversation that I believe the industry is lacking is pivotal. I think this is going to be the turning point. I really do.
Yeah, well, we're seeing it maybe from our membership and some of our, we got dedicated technical helplines where they're ringing, and it's not all, oh, I don't know how to do this. It's not all regs based. It is sometimes coming about equipment and products that have been using. Yeah. If you think about the renewables industry, just to go on a bit of a tangent, if your accreditation is MCS, you've got to use type tested stuff. Mm. I believe for every electrical installed, and the regs is quite clear on that, it should be the way. But I say, due to lack of regulation, you can use some spurious thing you found on the internet, and the customer doesn't bat an eyelid. And that's a key issue we've probably not covered about, the wholesaler, the installer, the designer. The customer awareness is another thing, isn't it?
Well, that's what we wanted to highlight today. Was the end point installer, let's try and inform them about these products and why you should use them.
Yeah.
And I think that's really key that we get that across today from you guys.
It's another avenue of our approach as well. So, I mentioned social media. Obviously, we have more traditional ways of getting our message out there. Whilst we exclusively sell to wholesalers, we do have conversations with contract. We had a guy in this week who's a local contractor to us for a very similar conversation. So, getting that message out there is just absolutely tantamount. It really is. I think wholesalers can play a key role in that. Cause
I was just going to say, how does it work with the wholesalers without dropping you a curveball in there? You might not be able to answer it because wholesalers might be listening. Sorry, wholesalers. Because they've got an agenda. Obviously, they're a commercial entity themselves, you know. And you mentioned earlier, Jake, on the tour that you get a lot of independents, obviously, interested as well.
Yeah.
They might not take the bulk orders, you know what I mean? But wholesalers might have that, their markup price and their revenue getting something back of a product they might push might not be a MetPro product. Yeah. Is that a constant battle you find your face? Are you so proud of it, you're so cheap, take your choice. If you don't want to sell it, we're confident our product's out there.
Well, I think... the way I see that, the wholesalers are a slap bang in the middle of that. And so again, it comes back down to the driving factors. So cost originally was the one, but now what we're starting to see is customers demanding what they want with a bit more knowledge. The whole idea of all of this is that we create knowledge right down through the supply chain. Wholesalers, we get them on very, very regularly asking for information that's been asked of them. So we tend to find that's starting to turn now as well. They're getting a bit turned on, for want of a better phrase, by the information that can be supplied through to them. Because when they come to us and they ask us a question, invariably we know why they're asking it and what it's being asked for. So we provide them with everything they're going to need to answer that professionally, properly, and it goes right back through. And very seldom do we get somebody come back going, that's not what I want to do.
No, I think you're right. I think I saw a change in wholesalers when they started doing like lighting solutions for their installers and their designers. Yes. So they're not just there. They're there to do much more than just sell you something.
And they know that they're going to get asked questions around the product. So rather than buying something over here that's really cheap and, I've saved myself a tenner, I'm going to go for that one because I know that the support's there. And that's something we work very strongly on. There's myself and a couple of guys in the technical department who and the marketing team, we work closely with them to put the right information together in a way that's easy for people to understand. It's clear, it's visible, and that can answer all the questions for the wholesalers and subsequently the guys, the people at the end.
I think there's a real key point that we're missing in this as well. And just before I do want to make that point, Tom's given me the death stare of please stop tapping the table as you're talking. So forgive the passive aggression. I think there's a key point we're missing in this at the wholesaler level, which is that's one of the big differentiators that they've got versus people who are selling online, because that's been a consistent concern for wholesalers for a number of years now. And that's where your technical expertise is what's going to separate you, and having that human to human relationship that we all seem so or certainly society seems so keen to push on us, but actually we all want to talk to people. And you go into your branch and you have a, you know, you have a coffee and a chat, and you know that what's going on there, you can trust what they're telling you. I think that's a really big factor for wholesalers. And there are some that are really, as Mick said, pushing that. Your technical knowledge needs to be great.
You look at things like CEF, the tech talks. I mean, what Darren and Dave are doing, you know, that's above and beyond whatever wholesalers have done before. They might have had a little van outside them or someone technical, but that's a whole new thing.
Yeah.
So I think all power to the industry coming together.
Absolutely.
From guys like yourselves, the installers, the designers, and the wholesalers. It's got to be joined up thinking, hasn't it?
It's getting that message across, isn't it? That, you know, we're all singing from the same hymn sheet, so to speak, you know, about safety and quality being hand in hand.
And I think that's the service now. It's not just about the parts anymore. It's about the package of service. It's about what we're supplying and what and the support around it.
Yeah. So sometimes choice isn't a bad thing. We think too much choice is a bad thing, but actually having the right choice and the right product in front of you is a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not all, like you said earlier, Jake, not all things are the same, not
absolutely
all conduits
not
are the same.
Yeah.
You know, I saw that when we were down in the quality control area. You know, something as simple, I know not great for your audio listeners, but we've got things like the threaded rod with the 60 degree and the 30 degree.
Yeah.
You know, that
know
was, even to me as an installer back in the day, oh, this is fine. You know, if like you said, if an air conditioning unit falls on my head because I've not used a quality one, that's not a good outcome for anyone.
And also with the thickness wall of the steel conduit, that was really interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, Mick, explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, about your spec on that.
Well, basically, under the standard spec, there's not a thickness control on the wall. What there is are 12 classifications that the conduit needs to be tested towards, and that includes things like compression, impact, tensile strength, and temperature, and many more. But and so that tends to control the wall thickness because it needs to be a thickness to achieve the ratings that it does. We have ours fixed. It's to a minimum 1.37, and the reason for that is because our product is rated to the highest grade on compression and impact, and to achieve that, it needs to be a minimum of that thickness. So and that's the control we put in.
Yeah.
But just come back to the point you mentioned on stampings earlier on there, on the conduit. The British standard requires the conduit to be stamped with a logo name that's traceable. It also needs the standard to be stamped on in full, and also an identification of the product in our class 4 product. We would put class 4 in the tube size, and then we've got a couple of stampings that we put on ourselves for traceability. But the key one is is 4 digits that they stamp on there.
It's not great for our audio listeners, but it's in the middle of the conduit, so to speak, on the markings there, isn't it?
We can flash a photo up to show this.
And it's something for our installers and members to look out for now, I think, to be a bit more savvy about that. But sorry, it's catching
trouble. No, that's fine. I mean, on ours, we have the digits 5557. As I said, there's 12 classifications within the standard. The first 4 of them relate to compression, impact, lowest temperature, and highest temperature. And the 5557, the first 5 is for compression. That's the highest classification for that in the standard. And then the next 5 would be the impact, again, the highest standard. The next 5 would be the lowest temperature, and the highest standard for that. And then the 7, there is actually 7 grades for the highest temperature, and ours meets that as well. And that's what we consider you should expect for a metal rigid conduit, a 5557 grading.
So that's something you should be looking out for on your steel conduit.
Stamped. We were talking about that earlier, wasn't we? I remember conduits where I haven't seen any marking on at all.
I'm in that boat as well. I've installed conduit and there's been no marking on them. So
and you've sensed that quality of it as well, Mick, like you say, because like as installers or previous installers, back in the day when I was a spark, you know, you saw the quality stuff. But then over the years, you see the stuff where you bend, it's got ripples in it as you put a 90 degree bend in it.
Sort of stretches,
you
isn't it?
Thread it, and basically you thread it and the thing's crumbling away.
That's it. I mean, the moment you start bringing the wall thickness down, you put a thread on there and the pitch of the thread can start eating through and coming through the inside and all those things. That's why you need to have a wall thickness that's going to cope with all of that. And also the compression test. For me, the standard's a good one because it doesn't talk about dimensions necessarily now. It talks about functionality and the control of it. And so for me, that's the best way. The old standard used to talk a lot about dimensions and everything else. But for this one, it's got to function correctly. And I think that's the best way to go with it.
Okay. Another, I think a really important point on this as well. So if you talk about tube, Now you have to correct me if I'm wrong here, but a competitor's tube, or you know, you get two lengths of tube by two different brands, and they could be exactly the same wall thickness, exactly the same, you know, dams are all the way through, which they should be anyway. For all intents and purposes, they will function exactly the same. But if one length of tube doesn't have one of the required markings on, it does not comply. Mm. Simple as that. Mm. It doesn't comply. Mm. And you don't want to expose yourself to that. And it's if you move across to channel, the requirements on channel for stampings are an identifying logo, the British standard, and they're the two, aren't they? Yeah. If they're missing either or of those, or both, it doesn't comply. It's that simple.
Yeah. Again, for all their listeners, not great, but you can clearly see it on their product, can't you?
Yeah, stamps everywhere. Yeah.
And again, this comes back to the driving factors. On site, people want to know they're getting a product that meets the right standards.
Yeah.
And that's why the product needs to be stamped, so that even when it's installed, you can go trace it back and check to make sure what it's accredited to.
Which reinforces my point around the wholesaler, you know, the contractor, the end user, and then the management, the facilities management beyond that, once the build's done. They need to have confidence and trust. Don't put that word trust, that keeps product, coming up, yeah, within their wholesaler, who then needs to have trust in the manufacturer. And I do see those relationships getting more and more robust now.
Yeah, I think we've got to stop living in a world of when something goes wrong, we start working backwards to apportion blame. Yeah. If we do that front end and we're confident that the thing, you know, it meets the standard, then we're not going to be in a world of pain like you talked about with things like Grenfell and all that. That really heightened not just electrical installations, what we're putting into buildings full stop. Yeah. It needs to have a different mindset.
Well,
look at Rod,
you know, we got you to put the full nut on the 30-degree and the 60-degree. And you can feel the difference there. Now, okay, it works. It functions. But how much weight are going on those rods? Mm. It's so dangerous potentially.
Yeah. As I said, we did a theoretical test on it, and when you've got thread at 60-degree angle, you've got your load bearing on that, and that's correct. The moment you change that to a 40-degree angle on that thread, the load bearing theoretically reduces by half.
And that's how much of a change of angle, really. Is it not dramatic, is it?
It's not. And to the guy on site, to be fair to him, may not notice the difference. But and he's busy hanging stuff up in the air, you know, happily thinking he's got a product that's going to meet the load bearing of a standard M10 thread. Mm. And so, you know, these are the concerns that we see. You know, we want to be visible and we want to be open about it. Jake does quite a lot of work with the guys in marketing in regards to what we're seeing out there. Sometimes we've seen it in our supply and we've caught it at QC levels. We're just saying, please be aware, this kind of thing's going on, looking out for this, because we're trying to educate the customers to what they want to be looking out for, so that they're not going to get inferior product or something that could be dangerous moving forward.
My rule of thumb with rod is if you've got a piece and you all of a sudden think about having a Toblerone, I probably wouldn't use that piece of rod.
Yeah.
New Toblerones anyway.
Yeah. Toblerone, is that the things you used to get at Christmas that were like a triangle?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember them vaguely. Yeah.
50% less spikes now.
Only at Christmas do you see Toblerones.
Such a Christmas thing. I suppose we probably should start talking about a bit Conlock, your product.
Some of your products.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, on there. What's your feedback from industry over Conlock? How's it gone down? Or is it selling well, etc., to the wholesalers? I suppose that those kind of conversations.
Yeah, you take that one, Jake. Cause
okay, well, I'll kid you. I mean, change in our industry is challenging, and that's a very fair assessment. And Conlock's been around for, you'd have to correct me again on this, and that's why I've 10, 15
I
years.
I 2005.
Yeah.
Around about that sort
so
of
you're
time,
coming
yeah.
up on 20
yeah.
years.
Can you just explain what Conlock is to our listeners, just in case I'm not
yeah.
across it?
Yeah, simply, Conlock is a non-threaded system. The advantages of it are, obviously, that you don't need to thread the tube. The spouts are, the tube will just literally slide into them. And then you have a high tensile grub screw that you would screw down, a little Allen key grub screw that you'd screw down tight. It would bite into the conduit, holding it in place. It would also, that biting would create the earth continuity you would expect between the two mating components.
Okay,
and the biggest advantage of it is the fact that when you do produce a malleable box, you class 4 coat it, hot dip galvanize it, then you cut the threads into them, and so you have a raw thread. With the Conlock, you don't cut that thread in, so you've got a class 4 finish inside the spouts as well, and so you avoid any risk of corrosion in that area as well.
Yeah.
From an installer's point of view, it's not something I'd used by the time I'd got off the tools, but having a little play today and seeing other stuff, you know, anything that's like got that kind of might not be the right word, but ease. Yeah, I suppose it is making life easier for installers.
Yeah.
You know, but the aspect of quality is still there. It's purely just got to be a good thing. I'm not one of these electricians that's going to sit here and go, well, back in my day, I used to love doing threads, because I didn't. As an apprentice, I did so many of them. I hated it, you know.
Well, I used to have muscles back in the day. The skill in the conduit would always be your manufacturing, your bends and your sets. That was always the skill. That was the skill set for me. And you work with some electricians and they could just look at something and bend it and you was amazed.
There's no joy in doing a thread, is there, let's be honest, especially a running coupler.
No, but as long as it gives you that quality and that guarantee what they've talked about.
I like what you said there, Mick, about the you're talking about things because you've done the research, you've done the R&D to say actually earth continuity. The fact that once you've took the thread off, you've weakened that point, really, haven't you, in a way?
We need to create a product that will sit quite happily against the conventional product, but offer all these other features and benefits that we're talking about.
Are you seeing it spec'd more and more on jobs?
Say again, sir?
Is that in industry, are we seeing it spec'd more and more with the feedback you've had?
I would say so from where I'm sitting. Jake's probably best to give a more of an indication of what we're seeing growth-wise.
I do agree. I mean, we're constantly asking for information from people so we can talk about it and get some case studies out there. But in terms of the jobs this has been on, I mean, Heathrow Terminal 2, the Sir Chris Hoy Velodrome up in Glasgow. The most recent one was the new Spurs ground. The most recent monster project, anyway, was the big Spurs ground. It's being spec'd more and more on numerous different projects. Actually, internationally as well.
Okay.
It's not just domestically that this is doing so well. But it's a testament to our team that are getting the word out there.
What is the price difference compared to a threaded conduit to a Conlock system
terms of a percentage? I can't answer that with 100%. Actually, it is more expensive.
Okay.
However, because it offers over 75% labour savings, and
you're offsetting one against the other.
Massively. Yeah. I mean, to give you a rough example, it'll take you approximately, based on our tests, 5 minutes to install a standard box. This Conlock is 1 minute. Because you're removing that need to thread it, you literally cut your tube, deburr, pop it in, tighten up the grub screw, which will hold it an adult male's weight with ease, by the way.
Yeah.
And away you go, and you move on to the next one. So, in terms of kickback, the one we've had really is de-skilling, which you've already addressed on removing the need to thread.
I don't buy into that. I don't see that.
I think it's a mentality. It's a fixed mentality.
It is a bit of an old school way of thinking because, like I say, we've moved on 10, 20, 30, 40 years. If we all sparks like we did all those years ago, we'd never have anything new on the market, would we?
Precisely. Well, we'd still be on horse and cart.
We still need to keep an eye on the old styles, though, because change comes to this industry relatively slowly, and so you've got to you go through a process, don't you? And
of course
in the designs that we've done on various products, we can talk about one of the Rapid Saddle, for instance, and the innovation around that. But that was designed very much to keep the look very similar to our conventional space bar.
So you didn't scare people today.
So they didn't go, oh, I'm not having one of these newfangled Star Trek things here.
No, I'm not having that.
Because we just recognise that fact. People know what they know. And if we can provide them with something that makes them still feel comfortable with that, but brings these benefits and features that our products do, great.
I still think, if I get my educational training head back on, I still think it's still worth pointing out, though, that people still should know how to thread a conduit.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that should ever be taken out of that system, but there's something that makes your life easier and quicker to install. Then I can't see the harm in it, realistically. I just don't see that.
And just there, it might be worth our listeners and our people watching this, like, you know, please do put comments in whatever format you watch it on, because we need that feedback, don't we? You know, to say, I've used it, loved it, indifferent about it, whatever, that feedback's invaluable to see what's happening out there in industry,
because
you might not get that back as much as you would like.
No, I mean, we do get comments, and you always get negative things, but we always answer the negative comments, and invariably people don't seem to come back to us because it's either we've annoyed them and sorry about that, because we've answered it so well, or it's put any concerns to rest, and hopefully they go on and use it. In terms of adoption, sorry, Mick, we are, certainly I'm seeing a growing trend of smaller contractors across domestic, industrial and commercial installations, especially with Conlock, and really using it. And roller trays are growing one as well.
That's good to
in
know.
In that area, which is great.
I mean, like you said, if they're smaller, they've got that. They want that speed, don't know, so to speak. So,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, you can just, these products help with that.
You get the job done, and then you can start bringing in more and more work. So, yeah, it's going to cost you more up front initially, but what are the long-term benefits? I think that's another bit of mentality shift instead of this race to the bottom. You know, hold yourself to a to the standard that you should hold yourself to, because the amount of time it takes to become a qualified electrician, and you guys will do things in a ceiling that you'll never see, but it's done to perfection because you know that you want it done right. Yeah. And I think that's so important, and it shouldn't be ignored.
Yeah. Yeah. And that comment about the people who are now starting to look at this product, that does bear true, because as I said earlier, we get technical questions almost on a daily basis, and we're seeing quite a few now coming through from people. Smaller jobs, smaller installations, but just interested in this new Conlock, they call it.
It's been around for a long time.
I tend not to say that. I just go, happy to. And we've got technical support that goes behind it, technical submissions that just talk very easily about how to use it properly and the benefits of that product and the other ones as well, like the roller tray that that Jake just mentioned there.
Additionally, on Conlock as well, we offer two finishes. So you've got your standard hot dip galv, which is internal and external applications, but because especially with the growing number of data centers and clean rooms that are being being built, we've also got a clean room option as well, so that mitigates the risk of zinc whiskers.
Is that like a stainless steel, or is it not quite?
Mick?
The issue with data centers is what the zinc flake. You get zinc whiskers. That's the word. And they get airborne. They land on contact switches and basically mess the system up. So what you really need, because these products are hot dip galvanized, then you have a galvanizing coating that can do that. So we have an additional finish on the clean room product, just to avoid that.
So it stops that, like a lacquer that prevents that coming off, is it? Something?
I'm not going to say lacquer. I couldn't ever
possibly say the word like
but we describe it like the KFC Herb 13 Herbs and Spices.
Secrets.
We could tell you, but you wouldn't be out of the other room. Ever again. Suffice to say, it works for data centres, and so Conlock really is being specced on quite a lot of data centres.
That's good for that
reason.
Really good.
Just coming back quickly, going back a bit towards the testing, obviously we've seen some of the quality assurance and quality control stuff within, and I take it you do some of the testing here, which that is really. Mm. What about the stuff you talked about with impact and things like fire, heat rating and stuff like that? So you talked about this one, again, for visual, not great, but it's got 557. You explained that earlier.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about lowest temperature, highest temperature, are those done externally? And
they would do. I mean, obviously, we've got an amount of internal testing we can do and the facilities to around that. But when you start to talk about specific testing, your fire ratings and stuff like that, then you have to adopt a third party to do that. It's just not practical to do that. But in regards to the certification, because that's the other key thing to this. Somebody asked me the question the other week about, well, it's all very well and good. Somebody can just stamp it. How would they know whether the product's right or not? It's got the right stamping on it.
Yeah.
And my only answer to that really was, well, if you're in doubt, ask for supporting information.
Yeah, you've got that to hand.
We can provide you with copies of certification, declarations of conformity, technical advice on installation, you name it, we're comfortable.
I think that's really good for listeners to know about that, really.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of the first questions about how are you getting to the end user? You're doing it quite naturally, organically, because you've got nothing to hide, have you?
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
If they want that technical information, here it is.
You've got your batch test, sorry, Mick, you've got your batch number on every length as well, so we can take every single length right back to raw material.
I think that's a key point to go and ask about these things. Don't be shy. Yeah. If you want that technical information from your manufacturers, go and ask them.
Absolutely.
They should provide it.
Absolutely.
Yes, they should. And more and more so now as we move on in the world we're in right now, with people needing supporting evidence on sites.
I think just on the quality controls that we have in place as well, I don't know if we explained this beforehand enough, but we do have dedicated engineers domestically and internationally, and we employ a number of quality checks to every single batch of product that we produce. So they'll be checked on site in country, then a report is pulled together, that's sent to the UK team, which Mick's a part of, and if they're happy with what they see, the product gets released, it lands here, and then it goes through the quality controls that you guys have seen. Yeah. And if you know, and you know, if at that point it's we didn't see that in the initial reports, but it goes on the quarantine shelf.
Yeah, we saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. you're and the end
it's
user
really
aren't
robust, isn't it? That
yeah, and it just it prevents the end user from having any problems.
It's really cool, isn't it? Though, from a geeky point of view, it's really cool, isn't it? It's not really my thing,
but speaking to the warehouse manager, but Paul, I'm not sure if that. Paul. Not sure if that was titled. He was great because he saw that process. We check it when it comes in because it's come. Although you're a UK company, we'll explain to the listeners. You know, those products are imported, but the checks that they go on, like you've just explained, Mick, externally before they get to you are robust.
Yep.
You're robust when it's thin. Then it's put on the shelves, so to speak, and then before it goes out to your customers, it's checked again.
Yeah.
So actually, that process is so thorough. Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're confident by the time it goes out. Yeah. You've got what you want.
And we was looking at the pickers list, weren't we?
Yeah.
The pickers in the warehouse, and no one was below 99 point something, was there? They were just like, well, this is a well-oiled machine here.
Well, that comes back to, like him or loathe him, but Jeff Bezos said it best about brand. It's what people say about you when you're not in the room, and hopefully they're saying about us. In fact, we know they're saying about us that never a problem with quality, never a problem with service, never a problem with deliveries.
Yeah. Mm. So, what about some of the before we start to wrap up? What about some of these other products that, again, your audio listeners? But we've got we talked about tri clip, trunk clip. What sort of?
And don't forget the old channel.
The easy fit channel nuts.
You love that.
I do, because I was not a fan of Zebedee's. I've got to be honest.
I'm not a fan of them, and I don't use them.
Forgive me, that's not their proper name. Spring loaded channel nuts.
Spring channel nuts. Yeah. So
forgive me, everyone knows the Zebedee's. You know.
Other brands are available.
Yes, of course they are. I was not a fan of them, and I wish. These would have been around when I was on the tools.
Right, and a lot of our installers and members are going to get this. There's nothing worse. You've got a trunk in, you're in a short space above a roof. You're trying to drill the hole in that's 6 foot hole
as well,
or above, and then you're trying to locate it, and there's lots of expletives coming out of your mouth at times. This thing is a game changer.
Yeah, 100%.
Just run through some of the other stuff.
Our products are about offering a choice. Right, you've got the conventional approach. So if we take the trunk clip product here, what we did with this particular product, the conventional approach is a hole through your trunking, and then line that up with a spring nut you've got in your channel, and then get your hand down into the trunking with an M6 bolt and try and tighten that down. That's easier said than done when you're 30 foot in the air.
It is.
And so for us, we looked at a product that could be like a wraparound clamp down effect on the external sides of the trunking. So it's all done from the outside. And this is very simple. I don't know if this can be seen on the camera.
We'll put a video
but
on
we can we can provide that for you certainly. And the idea of this is it's got an H in that, and that H, what that does is when it sits into channel like this, it stays there. And you could slide that along wherever you want to, and then you put the other one on the other side of it here. You're reaching, so it's a bit difficult. But the idea is that they're there like that. You then introduce the trunking into the middle of it, and you clip them both over the top. And they clamp onto the return of the trunking and hold it fast.
Then would the lid sit over
correct,
there?
Yeah. The lid does
so that
go on
some stability to your lid as well, isn't it? Almost
it
as well.
We're putting the lid on, we'll give it more support, I'm guessing, as well.
Once you put the lid on, it creates the square, and that's just its most robust.
I just love this stuff.
just game changers.
I'm going back on the tools.
It's fast fixed.
I'm not really.
Put it in the wrong place, you snap it off, move it along, clamp it back down again. 2-inch, 3-inch, and 4-inch height we do on these, and we also do a similar product. Can you just pass me that one there, please, Jake? Which is the same thing from a design point of view in regards to how it sits in the channel, but that works for medium return tray, we do a high return tray as well.
Yeah.
You might look at that and you think, well, that's got a different finish on than this. With tray, we recognise that that can be hard to galvanise sometimes and use externally, so our product has got a zinc flake finish on the outside.
You can clearly see that.
Which is, which is an external coating rather than internal. So these could be used outside as well for the tray. Right.
And you're seeing good these flying out the door and
people
wanting
them? The new products, it's developing, growing all the time. And it's again, I say it's a choice. We're offering choice to people in regards to something different. As the word gets out, as we have these kind of conversations, more and more we're seeing developing and growing through our wholesaler network.
And just an addition to that, then you might not be able to tell us all the trade secrets. Yeah, I take it that the R&D side of what you do then, because you're a company that wants to progress and look forward. What's next? What makes lives for installers' lives easier? Is there any snippets you can give us? Is there stuff in development?
Well, we have some new products coming through, new ranges, which we can't really talk too much about right now.
But in the same ethos of what you already do.
Absolutely. And developing our range, we're looking to grow and develop. So we're interested in two things. If there are products that we don't currently do that customers who would like us to add, we're interested in that. But more importantly, if somebody... Because we're not on the products, we're not on the tools themselves. We're not, the guys who are actually doing the job, they're the ones that have the issues.
So our listeners maybe get in contact with you guys if they've come across an issue.
They want a million phone calls.
And these installers may have a solution for you.
Some of the best ideas come out from the guys who are on the tools. I've done this for 10 years. It's a real pain in the back end. Yeah. How about if you just did a tweak there or did a turn there? Many of the products in the M&E range right now are decades old, if not centuries. I mean, literally. Yeah. And so when we talk about space bar saddles, that design hasn't changed in decades.
No.
The Rapid Saddle is a new innovation version. Still looks very similar, but offers so much more in practicality of installation. And we're more than happy to look at other products or things as well.
Yeah,
if people have ideas, then yes, we're more than happy to listen to them and talk.
Oh, okay. That would be really useful because you can mesh to conduit.
That's exactly it. For a single installer.
Yeah, when you're on your own with a 3 meter length of tube.
Exactly. You nip it up.
Conventional approach is having to screw all the saddle bodies to the wall, then bring your conduit up to it, and then slide the individual saddles over the
and
top.
You're guaranteed to lose one of the screws.
Obviously,
you're guaranteed. In your pocket. You can never get there because they're so small in your pocket.
So this product, you screw them on the wall, all the bases, all the saddles literally hang from them like a hook. You drop your conduit into it and then just go along one by one, push them up, slide along, tighten down.
Yeah.
Just as proof, basically, of what we just before we talk about Rapid Saddle, with people talking to us about ideas and innovations, there's a product on the table now which is Roller Tray, and that's what happened there. It was a contractor up in Scotland who approached us with the idea. Mike and our in-house engineer here worked with that person and developed the idea, and it's now on the shelf, and we have an arrangement in place, and that's what we can offer people as well.
And where does that product get mainly used? What sort of insulations? Where would you find
this,
it, so to speak?
It was designed primarily for underfloor installations. So
like computer floors.
Your full floor where you've got the tiles, and you lift
that's
up
it,
the legs.
Yeah.
Just for clarity for anyone watching, this isn't the full thing. So they come in 15-metre coils. The widths are 150mm, 300mm, and 450mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And essentially, you can put this on the floor, whereas traditionally you'd get basket or tray, you've got to connect it together in 3 metre lengths.
Yeah.
You can put this on the floor, give it a little kick, and 15 metres will be rolled out in 15 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's that simple. And then
I used to do a lot of those computer floors.
Well, rather than me getting it and messing up the sound, we'll put a video up, but they're designed so that they all interlock over each other, so you can have your bends four ways and everything else, and then you just
and can you put it on a wall up a riser main?
Riser main's another one.
Because it hasn't got a side wall like conventional tray, it will happily go around the bend.
Would that sit on some kind of unistrut frame underneath?
Could it
sit straight to the floor?
Straight to the floor, because it's got a series of holes down.
Because it's raised,
so you just literally just roll it out.
Tie up whatever you need to the
coil and how tightly that coil is tightened, because you over tighten it and all of a sudden the coil gains its new coil memory. So the idea is that we have it at a certain coil so that when you snip the bands on it's rolled out memory is still there and it just shoots off.
Doesn't fix itself, no?
No, it doesn't.
That's the next step.
That's what they're working on, isn't it? That's what they're telling us about.
That's it, yeah. But like Jake said, the dimple format along the top there works in both axes, so you can cross one across the top, and it's just a simple M6 bolt through the two to locate them, creates your crosses, your T's, your bends.
And then just feed a cable ties underneath and tight your cables, and away you go.
Andy, when we drive home, what we need to do is think of a new idea. This time next year, we'll be millionaires.
I think so as well, yeah.
We'll have such a good agreement in place with these guys.
Yeah. I think the last one that we haven't really given, which is your favourite, Andy, I know, is the Easy Fit Channel Nuts.
Yes.
So we'd go back to Zebs or Spring Nuts, whatever you want to call them. I mean, you guys know, it frustrates even me, and I've never installed them, but especially in slotted channel, but even in plain, trying to put them in is a pain.
Yeah.
Dragging them across the bottom to reposition them is a pain. Easy Fits are a nylon jacket around every single one, M6, 8, 10, 12, and you can just 90 degree turn them in, slide them up and down the length, and away you go. And you've got skew consolidation because you don't need short, long, and plain. You just have four sizes.
Ah, cool.
Because it works in shallow channel as well.
I've ordered the two shorts of an M6.
And we've even colour coded them for you.
Yes.
So you know which size thread you've got. Yeah. So made it as simple as we possibly can. Again, it's down to choice.
Yeah.
We stock the range of spring nuts, the conventional styles, because people use them.
Still traditionally like that method.
Order,
yeah, of course.
But the Easy Fit nuts, they're another part of the range, and you know.
And was that idea came from installer and came to you and said, look.
That was before me, so I can't answer that.
That was working with a manufacturer of ours. It was an idea they had, and you know, the one question that I'm asked of is the plastic jacket on it, because obviously plastic in electrical installations now and fire and everything else, people get a bit worried about. Well, reality is once that channel nut is in place and whatever is tightened to it is tightened down, the nylon coat, if you like, it becomes null and void.
Right. It doesn't, it's irrelevant, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just an ease of install.
That's,
isn't
absolutely. That's exactly it. Yeah, it just holds it in place.
Right.
But a lovely little product, and really starting to gain.
When I first saw
that,
I was like,
yeah, all these things we needed, and
we had to get you a flannel to cool.
Yeah, I see. Especially the first time, I thought.
So coming back to the original question, we're more than happy for people to come up with some ideas and thoughts on what would make products easier for installation, and we'll have a think around that and have.
That's good to know.
Yeah,
it's really good to know.
And we'll work with you on it as well.
Yeah. So when these go out, like obviously from our members, make sure that you are commenting, getting in touch with these guys, and anything you can think of that's making install easier, please get in touch, because you guys are forward thinking and want to do it. Anything else you want to ask us before you?
I think from my perspective, and I'm just thinking about the next generation. Do you see, because the like I think I've said it a couple of times now, that the big kickback on innovation is always going to be removing the skill from the job, which isn't our intention. Mm-hmm. I understand the argument, but it's also not the case. Do you think this is inevitable, especially for, you know, for the young sparkies that are coming through the college system and the apprentice system? Do you see them gravitating to innovations like this?
I would.
I mean, you've recently come out of education.
I would say so. I think, like I say, if something's got to be ease of install and makes their life easier and quicker, I think that generation would.
Yeah.
I think maybe the older generation that grew up threading conduit might be
a bit more reluctant
for change.
Yeah.
That's just natural.
I think you've hit a good point there, because we're up against a battle of old school lecturers as well.
Yeah.
We've both worked in education.
Yeah.
So the college systems, not so much independent training providers, will always do what they've always done because they're reluctant to change.
Mm.
But for you guys, my advice, and I'm sure you're already aware of this because you're working with, you've worked with other organisations. I've seen you with Gary Hayes, brilliant guy doing stuff with eFix.
Yeah.
Darren Staniforth, and obviously the CEF stuff. But I think if you can get into that market through the colleges and get that impact and get your products in there, that's what they'll know.
Yeah.
Because that's the biggest danger, is they're taught an old school way of doing it. And like Andy said, there's merit in threading. We still show them how to strip MI
Absolutely.
Cable and all
yeah.
that old school thing, which probably is not a relevant cable anymore. But I think for you, I would say, like, get it in there, get so they're used to it. So when they do become qualified, it's just a natural progression.
Yeah.
They're more open to that change because, you know, whereas like Andy just said, and we, you know, repeating it a little bit, but if I've always done something a certain way, I'm stuck in my ways a little bit. I love change, because change for the good and change for safety and it's not compromising anything is a good thing. But the younger generation, they'll grow up with this stuff and go, why did you used to do it like that? Are you mad? it's taking you twice as long.
I echo that definitely. And finally, where do our listeners go and get to know you guys more better?
Website, I presume.
Metpro.co.uk is our website. We're also pretty prolific, I think, now on social media. So you can find us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and we've got a burgeoning YouTube channel. Metpro Insights is a dedicated podcast is available on all those platforms. YouTube is where they're in full, but we also do an audio only, which is available on pretty much all the major
Spotify, all the major podcast platforms. Social media, as you all know.
I think the stuff you guys are doing and other UK manufacturers are doing in that space is fantastic, because that's social media is such a powerful tool, isn't it? And coming together to do joint podcasts, webinars, whatever, you know, a few DAF videos and Instagram. It's where people are getting information from, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is brilliant.
I've really enjoyed today.
Really good, guys. Thank you for today.
Thank you for the tour. Thank you for the coffee. Thank you for hosting us. We've had a giggle. It's been good fun.
Thanks for coming in. Real pleasure.
All right. So thank you guys for listening to a MetPro Insights podcast and a Nape It's What Current podcast. It's about mouthful, but go on all the usual formats. Have a listen, have a watch. Please comment and get in touch if you've got any more questions. See you on the next one.
Cheers, guys.